It is April 21st. The Colorado Rockies are 6-14, and a long losing streak has been snapped. Let's talk. This is Adjusting for Altitude.
Baseball is a difficult game. The average hitter gets on base in less than 40% of their plate appearances, yet the average pitcher gives up 4 runs every 9 innings pitched. The sport is a challenge on its own. But in Altitude, the problems for baseball players compound. Less break on pitches, balls that fly significantly farther than at sea level, and then after playing in such a treacherous environment, the players play in normality for half of their regular season. Adjustments must be made by those who don the purple pinstripes of the Colorado Rockies. We discuss those adjustments here. This is Adjusting for Altitude with baseball fanatic and aspiring MLB general manager, Christopher Nelson II.
Welcome to Adjusting for Altitude, breaking down the unique challenges and difficulties for the only MLB team that plays a mile above sea level. It's streaming on all podcasting platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and the works. So if you listen to any of those podcasting platforms, you can find that podcast there. And if you're listening to this episode, apparently you've already found it on one of them. So continue keeping up the listenership. It is very, very much appreciated on my end. I hope you've enjoyed this show thus far. And I've got a few changes that I'll be getting into about the show in just a few seconds. But today's episode is sponsored by I don't know really. Probably just a snapped 8-game losing streak. You know, at this point in time, we'll take our wins when they come. I think that's a very obvious win that we can take this week. Snapped 8-game winning streak will be the sponsor of today's episode. But if you haven't listened to last week's episode, go ahead and do it. What are you doing? Again, the only way you're getting out from not listening to last week's episode and slacking on listening to last week's. I can't even English now. That's how disappointed I am in the listenership. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, go ahead and do it. That's the bottom line. I think last week's episode, I was officially the saddest Rockies fan that I've ever been at any point in my lifetime. So if you're interested in hearing me be a little bit sad about the state of Rockies baseball, but at the same time mentioning some encouraging things about certain players, go ahead and listen to that episode. Also, if you don't follow me on Instagram, you got to go ahead and follow me over on the IG. That's really the only social media I use these days. I don't really have the time or the know-how to manage any of the other ones. So go ahead and follow me on Instagram at IamTheSecond, IamTheSecond. But with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Like I said, already end of April. Can you believe this? It seems like time just continues to fly. And I think that's the case as you get older. I've heard older people say that. So, you know, it just must be true by default, but it really does feel that way. I mean, the Rockies already have 20 games under their belt. If I can do quick math, I want to say that that's 12.5, roughly 12.5% of their season. I know I'm a big math nerd. So, you know, you can bully me for that later, but there you go. Yeah. Over 10% of the season is already done. Time is flying. But before we get into today's episode, I did mention, I don't think I mentioned actually, I was going to mention that there are some changes that I'm going to be making to this show. And I figured, you know, as listeners, you'd want to know. They're not major changes at all or anything, but they're fairly significant enough that I figured I'd let you know. So I think I'm going to be moving streams, or I guess recordings, podcast recordings, because this is not live streamed anywhere, to Thursday evening. I think it works better for my schedule. And, you know, Thursdays are typically an off day for the team. So it kind of gives us a nice little off day where there's not a game going on that I can actually get the recording in and then go watch the games over the weekend without having to worry about doing recording while the game's going on. So I think that works better with both my schedule and the team's schedule as well. The second change that I'm making to the podcast is that we're going to make it less of just a Rockies reporting podcast, and we're going to make it more so an analytical podcast, because that's originally what I started this podcast with, the intentions of making it a podcast where we actually get into the deeper, more nitty-gritty details of the Colorado Rockies and their players and the adjustments that those guys need to make in order to succeed in the circumstances that they're playing in as a member of the Colorado Rockies. So we're going to make this a more analytical podcast. That means, I know last week I mentioned we're cutting out the Around the MLB segment. We will continue to keep that out. But in addition to cutting out that segment, we're also going to remove the segments where we go over the last week in review for the Colorado Rockies and where we preview the week ahead. Instead, we're going to try a new format where I kind of just discuss some of the notable happenings, like a few of them, from the world of the Colorado Rockies in a more casual manner, and then transition into discussing about 3 to 5 players on any given episode and just taking an in-depth look at them. So we're going to use a variety of resources to help us analyze those guys in a little bit more depth as well, Baseball Savant probably being the most notable. So we're going to be looking at things like their spin rate, their fastball velocity, and where they rank percentile-wise in the major leagues in those categories and how that is impacting their play, what I've noticed just with my eyes and watching some of these guys, and to see how the eye test matches up with the stats. And we can compare all of those little metrics that we've learned from each individual player, and we can just make projections and say, hey, this is what this guy needs to do in order to succeed going forward and stuff like that. So I think that's the intention of this podcast. I haven't really done that to this point, about 5 episodes in, but that is my intention going forward. And we're going to start that on today's episode. But before we do, I think one of the notable happenings over the last week was a craze in Rockies Nation about the worrying attendance. So for those of you who aren't maybe as aware or really pay attention to MLB attendance, it's been interesting because the Colorado Rockies haven't usually been a very good team over their franchise's history outside of like 5 or so seasons. However, despite not being in the playoff hunt in most years, the Colorado Rockies tend to rack in a lot, I mean a lot, of attendees every single year, like despite being a bad team. In 2021, the Colorado Rockies were 7th in Major League Baseball in average attendance per game, clocking in about 24,800 attendees per game. In 2022, the Colorado Rockies, it slipped a little bit. They slipped down to spot number 9 on this list, but again, 32,467 attendees on average at Coors Field. Now in 2021, the attendance numbers were significantly lower, mostly because there were a lot more restrictions on attendance in that year. And I remember that was the first year after the shortened COVID year. And I do believe that for the majority, if not all of the season, there were specific attendance requirements that needed to be met, as in like a cap on the amount of people who could attend a game in a lot of cities, not every city, obviously, because those laws are dictated by local government and state government. But the Colorado Rockies, nonetheless, for the environment and the circumstances that they were in both 2021 and 2022, finished top 10 in the major leagues in attendance. So despite being a bad team, the Rockies do get their attendance numbers pretty darn high. In 2023, however, in the early going, the Colorado Rockies find themselves at 15th. In attendance, more middle of the pack. And this has some people concerned, not only because they're middle of the pack now in attendance when they've been top 10 in each of the last 2 seasons and probably even beyond then, but on Wednesday afternoon, a game that they played against the Pittsburgh Pirates here at Coors Field, the Rockies saw the lowest attendance at one of their games in 10 years. 18,511 people watched the Rockies get crushed by the Pirates 14-3 for the second time in this series. So again, Rockies fans are kind of just scared about this. And the news of a team like the Oakland Athletics potentially relocating and probably relocating to Vegas within the next few years is bringing up all sorts of rumors about like, oh my goodness, are the Rockies going to have to be relocated? Are people going to continue putting up with such a terrible product for longer than they physically can? And the answer is, I think yes, I think they will. I don't think Major League Baseball is a fan of relocating teams. But when it comes to a team like the Oakland Athletics, that was a relocation that needed to take place. And that did need to get set in motion sooner than later. Not just because the Oakland Athletics haven't been raking in pretty much any attendance over the last few seasons or so, But even in the years where they were good and should have been racking in lots and lots of attendance, they really weren't. Right? There were years where they won over 90, 95 games, and they still were not really leading the league in attendance. Bottom line is, there are definitely dedicated baseball fans in Oakland. I mean, obviously, they've experienced success over that franchise's career in that city. Nonetheless, the financial issues behind the entire matter aren't really going to be enough, it looks like, to keep that team in the city, and it looks like they're going to be relocating to Vegas. I think the team did purchase an area of land around the Strip that could be the potential grounds for building a 35,000 capacity baseball stadium within the next few years. So that's already being put in play. But like I said, the Rockies, I don't think at this point in time, will be on that list of teams that could be relocated. It just doesn't seem like something that would make sense for Major League Baseball to do at this point in time. So there shouldn't be any worries, even despite the Rockies' slow attendance to start the year. And again, the year is early. Again, the Rockies could very well just go on a crazy run down the stretch. I don't think it's very likely that they do. I think this ends up being the worst franchise or the worst season in franchise history by a decent amount. This could very well be the team's first 100-loss season if the way they're playing continues to be maintained. But again, that could change. Nonetheless, I think it's time we get into something unique. Like I said, I want this to be a very analytical show where we dig into things that people really aren't digging into. And among those things, I would like us to dig into five players, like I said, 3 to 5 players every week, just to track them throughout the season and see if their style of play and their analytics dictate that they can be successful at Coors Field and be contributors to a successful Colorado Rockies baseball team at some point in the future. But again, this season has not started off well for the Colorado Rockies in general. So the success of the team, or lack thereof, I guess, can't really be pinned to 3, 4, or 5 players in particular. It's a team effort. The team as a whole has been bad. But of those players, we can pick a few that we're like, I don't know. You're struggling a little bit more than the rest there, buddy, right? But again, we're going to keep this at a very team level in general. The team is struggling offensively, and it's pretty obvious that they're struggling offensively. I think MLB has them like overall ranked at like 11th in total offense. I don't know why that would be, but they are really not playing like a team that is 11th in offense. They are tied for 4th in the league in strikeouts as a team, 185 through 20 games as it pertains to their pitching. 5.51 staff ERA is good for 2nd worst, only behind the Oakland Athletics, the aforementioned Oakland Athletics with a 7.71 staff ERA. And then their fielding percentage is also good for 4th worst in the league as well at 981 through 20 games played. So this is clearly not a good baseball team. But the notable things that we can see from these stats are very telling. Number one, this team strikes out way too much. Like way too much. 185 strikeouts in 20 games is not good. It is not good at all. And to go with those strikeouts, nonetheless, the team finds themselves about middle of the pack in runners left on base. Although it feels like to the eye, it's a lot worse than middle of the pack. They are middle of the pack. They leave about 7 runners on base per game. Now, one could very well just say, okay, this is probably because on games or in games that they don't get on base a lot, they don't strike out, or in games that they do get on base a lot, they strike out, which would then match the eye test that I would agree with based on what I've seen. It seems like whenever we have runners on base, and especially runners in scoring position, somebody K's or two somebody's K, depending on how many outs there are. So that might actually match the eye test. That could very well be the case. I don't know if that's the truth, but I could certainly believe it. That said, let's just break down a few guys that have been pretty impactful, I think, thus far this year for the team. I've got 5. I picked out 5 for today's episode, with it being the first episode done with the new format. So we shall see how it goes. But I will say that if I were to pick an aspect of the team that has struggled the most, I would say I've been fairly disappointed in long relief thus far. That being Connor Siebold and Ty Block. And obviously the Rockies are going to need to have good long relievers, considering their starters are kind of in like a limbo. They've got difficulty with starters going deep into games, and that I think is fairly explainable. Outside of Herman Marquez and Kyle Freeland, who are expected to lead this staff and have done a pretty good job, all things considered, thus far this season, outside of Kyle's one bad start against the Pirates where he didn't get out of the second inning, having given up 9 runs, he's been fairly solid this year. Same thing for Herman before he got put on the IL with a forearm injury. But again, the long relief needs to be able to step in for the bottom three of our rotation, who aren't going to be as good as Freeland and Marquez. Urania has had difficulty going deep into games thus far this season because of his lack of command, whether that be walking too many guys, whether that be giving up home runs. He has not been it thus far this year. Now, his last start was a little bit more encouraging, but he still gave up a few home runs, so there's still work to be done. Austin Gomber had a fairly solid start to the season, but over recent games, he's kind of reverted back to the Austin Gomber that we're used to seeing, just a guy who mislocates pitches when he really, really doesn't need to, and a guy who, given his lower velocity, really can't afford to do so in the way that a few other guys in the league who might not have as good command or control, but at least throw 95, 96 on their fastball rather than 91, 92, might be able to afford to do here and there. Ryan Feltner is kind of the guy who will give a little bit more of an excuse to, or excuse for, given that he's like in his second year, I want to say, a big league experience. So he's definitely got some growing to do just as an MLB player. And I think that is something that Buddy understands, which is why he's giving Ryan a little bit more leeway, it seems, to work out of situations. And then if he can't, then Buddy will end up pulling the plug. So he'll give Ryan certain batters that he believes Ryan can get out, even if it feels like that's a batter that he could take Ryan out. It seems like Buddy is giving him those opportunities to learn. So bottom line is those bottom of the rotation guys have struggled for various reasons thus far this season. That means long relief is absolutely critical to team success. You need guys who can come in the fourth or the fifth inning if a starter is having an off start, and be able to give you about 2.2 or so innings worth of work where you're like, okay, thank you for keeping this game competitive. We'll see if the offense can get us back in it. Unfortunately, neither Connor Siebold or Ty Block thus far this season have really given us any of that. It really hasn't been good. So far this season, Connor Siebold finds himself, he doesn't have a win or a loss, but he's got a 5.23 ERA in 10 innings pitched, roughly 10.1 innings pitched. And then Ty Block finds himself 0-0 as well with a 7.71 ERA in 9 innings pitched. So I wandered my way over to Baseball Savant to see what these guys are looking like just from an analytics perspective. Obviously, I've said on earlier episodes of this podcast, there's a certain build that I feel philosophically would be the build of a pitcher that can succeed both at Coors Field and away from home. Although obviously succeeding at Coors Field will be more important, in theory, at least, because that's the place that's typically deemed harder to pitch at. And again, this is the mold that I came up with. I came up with a guy who throws about 94 to 97 with a fastball, with RPMs hovering right around 2200, 2300. Or sorry, that's the MLB average. I want a guy who throws below MLB average. So I want someone whose spin rate on the fastball is right between like 2000, 2200. Just below MLB average spin rate, and I want them to use it like between 50-55% of the time. I think that's pretty reasonable for a fastball. Then for the slider, I do want their slider to be their second pitch that they use the most, about 23% of the time. I want it to be between about 86 and 89 miles per hour with a spin rate between 25 and 2700. MLB average is about 25,000 or 2500 RPMs. So again, I think just a guy who throws a slider that's pretty on par with the rest of Major League Baseball is perfectly fine. Again, why? Because breaking balls at altitude break fairly similarly compared to sea level as compared to fastballs thrown at altitude, which do not move the same at altitude as compared to sea level, which is why we want guys who throw sliders that are on par with MLB average spin rate as opposed to fastballs. We don't want those spinny fastballs. Why? Again, because spinny fastballs at altitude do not move as much as spinny fastballs at sea level. It makes adjusting for that control factor significantly harder, et cetera, et cetera. The third pitch I want, a pitcher whose home field is Coors Field to throw the 17% of the time is the changeup. I want that between like 84 and 87 miles per hour with a spin rate between 1500 and 1700 RPMs. Again, MLB average is about 1665. That's fine. Again, so somebody who just throws a normal changeup that's not thrown too spinny, right? Something similar to the fastball, but again, you don't want as much. You want a deceptive changeup. You don't want to be able to telegraph that pitch. It should be a nice little offset for the fastball, right? And then fourthly, obviously, curveball, that's fine. The curveball is similar to the slider in that it's not as impacted at altitude versus sea level as the fastball is. But again, it is worse than the slider in that it does, its movement is impacted more than the slider's is. And I think MLB is starting to realize this as a whole as well. Like I mentioned last week, briefly, it seems like slider usage thus far in Major League Baseball is also up as a whole compared to the curveball. But that's kind of what I want in a pitcher who can succeed at Coors Field and away from Coors Field as well. I don't know if I mentioned the velo for the curveball, 79 to 82 miles an hour, and the spin rate on that is over 2,500. So just a normal curveball, it will do. That said, let's go analyze our two very beloved long relievers who came into this year with the expectation that they can eat up innings if starters do not make it past like the five inning or so mark. We'll start with Seabold because Seabold has thrown more innings thus far than Block. Yeah, it might be one more inning, but I mean, it's still more. So far, Connor is rocking with a 93 mile an hour fastball. He uses it about 57% of the time. He's rocking with an 85 mile an hour slider that he uses 31% of the time, an 80 mile an hour changeup that he uses 11% of the time, and he throws his curveball less than 1% of the time at about 80 miles an hour. So right off the bat, we noticed a few little discrepancies between my ideal and Connor Seabold. Connor Seabold does not throw a fastball that is above major league average, right? I think major league average fastball, if I'm looking appropriately, is right around 94 miles per hour. And the solid majority of his fastballs are below major league average velo. Same thing with his slider, same thing with his changeup, and same thing with his curveball. This has led to a very interesting trend so far for Connor. We can take a look at his percentile rankings in certain pitcher-related categories. His fastball velo is 39th percentile. All right, so that 93 is certainly below league average. That's not a good sign. Now, usually you can offset this fastball velocity being so low percentile-wise if you throw it hard, or sorry, if you throw it a little bit spinnier. That's typically the way guys offset having a slower velo fastball. But obviously, we don't want a spinny fastball here, so that wouldn't be a very sensible adjustment for him to make. Not that he's making it currently. His fastball spin rate is 15th percentile in major leagues. So now we can start to see how the pieces are being put together and why this might not be a guy who can succeed at Coors in the long term. Obviously, he does have his plus areas. Like, for example, his average exit velo surrendered is 76th percentile. Unfortunately, his hard hit percentage is 38th percentile and his barrel percentage is 39th percentile. So he typically doesn't give up a ton of hard hits, but when he does, they're pretty hard hit. That's not something that you really want out of a starter, right? However, he's not walking guys. He's not walking guys. He's got 73rd percentile marks for walk rate, which is encouraging because obviously Buddy does not want his staff to give up free base runners. And it seems like Seabold is meeting that very basic requirement to start the year. But overall, it doesn't look too good for Connor. I don't like that trend. I don't like the trend of having a below average fastball that doesn't spin very well. At that point, there's no point. If you need to throw that fastball with lower spin, you got to get the velo up. If you don't do that, it's going to be ineffective. And like I said, the fastball, especially if you throw it 57% of the time like Seabold does, needs to be the pitch that sets up everything else. You can't throw an effective changeup if you don't throw an effective fastball. And we can also take a look at Ty Block as well. Like you said, he's thrown 9 innings so far this season, 7-ish ERA, almost 8, 7.71. Let's take a look at Ty's pitch distribution thus far. 91-mile-per-hour fastball thrown 48% of the time. 81-mile-per-hour changeup is the second pitch, 26% of the time. So he's very obviously heavy on the fastball changeup, and it does have good 10 miles per hour or so of difference. So he's got a solid base, it looks like, off the bat. His third pitch is a cutter thrown at about 84 miles per hour, 19% of the time, and then about 7% of the time he throws his curve. So, I mean, initially, you wouldn't like to see a guy who throws low velo like Ty does. Obviously, the 91 miles per hour is not higher than major league average with that pitch. And the changeup, however, is going to be a nice combo to it. It gives him hope that I think otherwise he wouldn't have if that changeup was more closer to 86 or 87 velo-wise. The cutter is an interesting tertiary pitch, though. Like, that's not a pitch you see a lot of guys throw with this type of build. So Ty is definitely unique in this perspective. Unfortunately, his uniqueness is not translating very well to success. Very similar to Seabold, he is top of the league in walk rate. He's 83rd percentile, so he's up there. Does not walk a lot of guys. Unfortunately, that doesn't really mean he's going to be successful by default. He's 28th percentile in average exit velo, 6th percentile in hard hit percentage. And even though he is 53rd percentile in barrel percentage, which is effectively around the league average, it's not really translating to success. Oh, by the way, he's also first percentile in strikeout rate. So despite the 10 mile per hour difference between the fastball and the changeup, which is very good, it's very good. You do want to see that. If you'll notice, back referring to my pitcher build, my ideal pitcher build, I do want the fastball and the changeup to be 10 miles an hour or so apart. That's, I think, going to be critical to succeeding in mixing those two pitches. However, I don't think there's a lot to like about Ty here. This build is going to be tough to succeed with. Even though he doesn't walk guys, he's not missing bats, and people are hitting him pretty darn hard. We'll get to the next three players that we're going to evaluate on today's episode in just 1 second. Stay tuned. Welcome back. So, like I said, on today's episode, we're breaking down 5 players from the Colorado Rockies 2023 roster who have made significant contributions and have been run out in a game several times this year in hopes that they will make a positive impact on the team. Thus far, we've kind of broken down Connor Seabold and Ty Block's season statistics and some of their more advanced numbers, such as their spin rate, their average pitch velocity and usage rate. And we've kind of seen that their lack of success is pretty well explained. Like I said, it's going to be important for the Colorado Rockies to have long relief that can go in about the 4th or 5th inning when need be, and just eat up innings if the rotation, especially the guys in the bottom 3 of that rotation, just happen to be struggling on any particular night. So far we've seen that Seabold and Block haven't done that. They haven't lived up to that expectation of being suitable long relief guys. But now I want to get into the third player that we're going to break down, and that's going to be Ryan Feltner. Now, Ryan is very unique. Like I said, he really does not have a ton of major league experience. Pretty much his only major league experience was 2022. That was his rookie year. I believe he graduated from rookie status in 2022 through 97 innings, which I do believe means he is not a rookie this year. But effectively, he doesn't have a ton of major league experience. So the lenience with Ryan will be a little bit more on days where he struggles. And he certainly struggled to start the year with a 1-2 record, 6.16 ERA in 19 innings pitched, that being 4 games. He has struck out 21 batters, though, and his whip is 1.68. Now, there's a lot to like about Ryan. We're going to go over to Baseball Savant again, and we're going to break down his 2023 pitch distributions and his percentile rankings. And I think we're going to see some very encouraging trends here. Now, before we get into that, I will say that I do like Ryan. I think he fits the mold of a guy who can succeed at Coors Field in a Colorado Rockies uniform. I think that he's got third man in the rotation type of potential. I will say, especially given some of the other arms the Rockies have in their system, a guy like Gabriel Hughes, who I think has ace potential, just bottom line. I think Ryan might find himself slotting into a three in the rotation, maybe two, maybe even two. But I think three is a safe bet for Ryan if he reaches his potential. But let's take a look at his 2023 numbers thus far. So his fastball, thrown 45% of the time, averages 95 miles per hour. His slider, thrown 30% of the time, averages 88 miles an hour. His changeup, thrown 16% of the time, averages about 84 miles per hour. And his curveball that he throws 9% of the time averages about 79 miles per hour. So already, off the bat, we see a lot of similarities. A lot of similarities to my ideal Coors Field pitcher build. Now, again, this is before we get into all the spin rate and all that fun nonsense, but just from a very basic foundational perspective, he's got the stuff. He's got the pitches. He's got the potential to succeed, like I've already said. And actually, you might be surprised at what you're about to hear with these percentile rankings for 2023 for Ryan Feltner. Because like I said, four starts, 6.16 ERA, that doesn't look very good. I mean, six runs in nine innings isn't very good for a starting pitcher. But then we start to look at his percentile rankings. Average exit velocity, Ryan is 81st percentile. Hard hit percentage, 76th percentile. XERA plus XWOBA, those are just very, very advanced MLB statistics that I honestly don't fully understand myself. But he's 51st percentile in that, so he's about league average in whatever that advanced statistic is. K, strikeout percentage, he's 57th percentile. Barrel percentage, 65th percentile. Whiff percentage, 50th percentile. Chase rate, 59th percentile. Fastball velocity, 73rd percentile. Fastball spin rate, 56th percentile. And even though he doesn't get a ton of extension, that doesn't really matter a whole ton, because extension, it varies per person. It's one of those things that it's just purely personal preference. The amount of extension that a pitcher gets, and by the way, if you don't understand fully what extension is, it just means how long their stride is, like how close they get to home plate before they release their pitch. It really doesn't matter. Like, you have guys like Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer who have smaller extensions, and then you got guys like Shohei Ohtani and Jacob DeGrom with fairly long extensions, and all of those pitchers are fairly successful in their own regards or have experienced success over the course of their career. Extension doesn't really matter a ton. But again, this is really, really encouraging to see from Ryan Feltner. Now, again, even going back to spring training, the one knock on him, and again, this comes with being a more inexperienced player, is his walk rate. He is 10th percentile thus far in walk rate. And that has been the knock, to be fair. He hasn't demonstrated consistency with either control or command thus far. I think that mostly boils down to some technical stuff, some timing stuff. But ultimately, this is very encouraging. He is above league average in most of these categories that I've just stated. And this is great to see. A guy who fits the mold of a guy who can succeed at Coors Field in the long term. A guy who has already seen a decent amount of success in just his second full season. If he can get that walk rate down, I think Ryan can meet that potential of being a very important piece of our starting rotation going forward. So that was very encouraging for us to see. Now, we've broken down three pitchers thus far on this episode, and I think we've seen the results have been kind of mixed. You have somebody like Ryan Feltner who looks like he's got potential to succeed in the long term, and then you've got guys like Seabold and Block who are going to need to figure something unique out in order to succeed in their own regards, considering they don't really meet the mold of a guy who can succeed at Coors Field in the long term. But now we're going to look at two of our younger bats in the lineup, because again, it's been a lot easier for us to see thus far that the pitching has been a problem. Pitching has easily been the bigger issue between the offense and, well, the keeping runners from scoring, keeping other teams' runners from scoring. Pitching has just not been good. The offense hasn't been amazing either, and I think two of the guys who are probably going to get a lot of heat for it from Rockies fans are Ezekiel Tovar and Aluris Montero. I guess it's not Aluris. I've been saying Aluris for the longest period of time. I think it's officially Ellerice. So I'm going to start saying his name properly. Ellerice Montero and Ezekiel Tovar. Both of them are very young. I do believe they're actually both rookies. I don't think Ellerice. I don't think Ellerice met the rookie requirements last season. So I do believe he's a rookie. I could be wrong, but Ezekiel Tovar is for sure a rookie this season. And we're going to start with him. So far in the 2023 regular season, he's batting 180. He has an on-base percentage of 242 and an OPS of 488. Not good. Not very good. Now, he does bat usually eighth or ninth in the lineup, so he's not expected to be one of the better bats in our lineup as a whole. But nonetheless, I mean, nobody really expected him to struggle this much. Like, we expected a decent adjustment period, and that's the same for pretty much every rookie that's ever existed. And then anybody who significantly exceeds rookie expectations, we're all just like, wow, that guy could be something. So for Ezekiel, it's not the fact that he's struggling. It's just the fact that he's struggling so much, I think, to start the season. Like, average exit velocity, he's 13th percentile. Strikeout percentage, he's 19th percentile. Chase rate, he's 27th percentile. Even though his sprint speed is 76th percentile, it really hasn't been used very much offensively because he's simply not putting the ball in play a ton. And when he does, he's not putting the ball in play hard. Now, I've already mentioned briefly on this podcast why I think this is. I simply think he's too closed off in the batter's box. I don't know if that's something that the hitting coaches are preaching. Stance-wise, I'm sure they're preaching more approach. And it sounds like, based on what I've heard, that approach is taking precedence over technique, in that our hitting coaches believe if our guys can just lay off a lot more pitches and force pitchers to work more, then that will give us more offensive success than manually tweaking some of these guys' stances. I think I'd obviously disagree. I think we do need to stop chasing so many pitches, but at the same time, it'd be just so reasonable to just say, hey, let's open up a tad bit. Like, I get that these guys have played in professional baseball for a long time, but once you reach the major leagues, adjustments just have to be made. Like, you've done well to get to this point in time, but if what you've done thus far isn't working, then there's no harm in trying something new, right? And I think for guys like Ezekiel, guys like even Ryan McMahon, like I mentioned briefly on a few episodes ago, I think just opening the stance up, it allows the hands to get through the zone quicker. And considering they're typically behind pitches more often than they are ahead of pitches, and as a result, they're struggling at the dish, I think opening up and giving those hands just the ability to work freely would just be significantly beneficial for a guy like Zeke, a guy like Mac, whoever it is who's got a very closed off stance in the box. But I do think Tovar can change this. Obviously, he's got the potential to do so. I've already noticed a few changes that he's making personally, like with his timing, for instance. His bat waggle is changed a little bit over the last week or so, just trying to get timing on pitchers. So he recognizes that change needs to be made, and I'm looking very forward to seeing if he can make those changes and how quickly he can make them. The last guy we'll break down is Ellerice Montero. Though so far this season, he's batting 260 with a 302 on-base percentage and a 682 OPS. He does have a home run and five RBIs, something that Tovar does not. Tovar has four RBIs, but he does not have a home run yet. So let's take a look at Ellerice. Ellerice, surprisingly enough, even though he's hitting 260 and his offense has been overall better and more productive than Tovar's has thus far this year, this is not pretty. His percentile rankings are not pretty, and that would agree with my eye test. Average exit velo is third percentile. Strikeout percentage is fourth percentile. Whiff percentage is first percentile. Outs above average is first percentile. His sprint speed is 43rd. Obviously not known as a speedster, as a corner infielder, but nonetheless, his walk rate is also 12th percentile. So this is just not a good offensive player at this point in time. You know, I think you can attribute it a lot to the breaking ball syndrome is what I like to call it. It's just the young player's desire to just smack a pitch that they recognize as an off-speed pitch, so much so that they completely disregard where it is, whether it's even a strike or not. And as soon as they identify an off-speed or a breaking pitch, it's just me must swing. Same thing with high fastballs. I get it. They're juicy. They look fun to hit. Unfortunately, they are not good pitches to hit. And I think Ellerys has kind of struggled significantly with those breaking pitches in the dirt. Fairly easy strikeout if you get him to a two strike count most often than not. That's unfortunate. But again, he does have the potential to get out of this slump. He is a guy who's good at making solid contact when he's on a pitch with his timing. I think that's another thing that's kind of been a struggle for him recently is just getting that timing on even fastballs, believe it or not. Like a lot of the pitches that he's hit, I know he's got a 260 average, even though he's third percentile in the league in exit velo. That makes sense because most of the hits he gets, it seems like, are just little bloops to center field or like little. I think he had an infield hit earlier in the year, if I'm not mistaken. So he's not making solid contact. And again, it just dictates that the timing's a tad bit off and that he's not seeing those breaking balls. And when he is seeing them, he's just swinging anyways. So I think that just, for the most part, boils down to discipline on behalf of the hitter. But there you go. That's going to be the first episode under this new format that I'm doing. I kind of liked it. I wasn't entirely used to, obviously, with this being the first episode with the new format, the flow of how it's going to go. But I think I have a good idea now going forward. And I do think this will be fun. It'll be fun to just pick like 3 to 5 players to just break down every week, in addition to some other little notable happenings within the organization. But I think amongst those 5 players, overall, am I encouraged about their likelihoods of making certain adjustments in order to succeed? I'd say for Feltner, Tovar, and Montero, I am. Obviously, Ryan has the tools to succeed as a starter at Coors Field, like I've said. And I think Tovar and Montero are just both guys who are working through various timing issues, technical things, and just a desire to swing at pitches simply because they've recognized them and not because they're good pitches to swing at. I think that will all change with time. I'm, however, not encouraged with Seabold and Block. I don't think either of them fit the mold of a guy who can succeed consistently. Again, obviously, just with whether it be not throwing their fastball very hard with a low spin rate, or just overall their builds they're not consistent with people who can succeed consistently in the long term. That's where I'll leave that. But I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I hope you enjoyed the new format. This is kind of what I envisioned for this podcast, so you better believe I'm going to make it refined so it comes out very nice, very cleanly, so you guys have a very nice podcast to listen to on a weekly basis. Thank you for listening to this episode, though. If you enjoyed it, share it with your friends and your family or the rest of anybody else that you think might be interested in listening to a Colorado Rockies baseball podcast that goes kind of in depth on some things that aren't discussed frequently amongst the Rockies community. Until next week, I hope you have a safe week, stay cool, and go Rockies.
This has been Adjusting for Altitude with Christopher Nelson II. If you are indeed a fan of Colorado Rockies baseball or simply a fan of MLB content, follow this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform and share this podcast with your friends and family. Baseball in Colorado is a complicated situation, but it is certainly not unsolvable. Until our next episode, take care and go Rockies.